that I'm here for one reason, and one reason only, and it is to confront the man that goes by the name of Hulk Hogan.
Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going back in the time machine to December of 1994. I'm being joined by Chris White. Chris, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
And Kieran Mitchell.
Hello.
Chris, start us off with the news.
Randy Savage made his WCW debut on the December 3rd edition of WCW Saturday Night with a promo where he proclaimed himself, not Hulk Hogan, the number one wrestler in the world. Savage was acting like a babyface, but it was a promo that very much suggested he will feud with Hogan at some point soon. At Starrcade, Savage teased joining the Three Faces of Fear after Hulk Hogan retained his title, but would eventually help Hogan run them off.
Hogan's next major feud appears to be set up with Vader. After the Savage moment, Hogan was being interviewed backstage. Vader confronted him and said he was the number one contender after defeating Jim Duggan for the US title. Hogan shoved Vader as the show went off air. Bizarrely, the company was still advertising Ric Flair in the majority of Starrcade advertising, both in newspapers and on television. While this appears to be nothing more than an error, people are still expecting Flair to return at some point in 1995.
Stunning Steve Austin will be out of action until late 1995, as it has been revealed he will have surgery on a torn ligament. He will be out for approximately 9 months. The other major news coming out of Starrcade is the departure of the Honky Tonk Man. Honky was asked to job to Johnny B. Badd at Starrcade, but refused. This and other contractual issues meant that he left the company. Arn Anderson replaced him at the last minute at the pay-per-view.
The WWF have rehired Jim Ross, but not as an announcer, as he was when he was previously employed by the company earlier this year. Ross instead will work in booking and TV production, and seemingly will be picking up on roles that Pat Patterson is cutting down on. In other WWF news, the company sent out a memo to all employees saying that any contact with anyone at WCW would result in dismissal.
There were reports earlier in the month that Hulk Hogan was going to drop the WCW title. Apparently Hogan had planned to drop the title to the Butcher in response to those saying he wasn't a company man. But many quite rightly pointed out that dropping it to one of his closest friends was hardly the most selfless move. In the end, Hogan nixed the idea because too many people knew about it ahead of time.
Sabu turned down offers from promotions including the WWF and WCW to accept a deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling. That will continue to see him work with ECW. It said the deal, which will give him freedom to work with companies like ECW, will end up being comparable financially to that of what he would earn in the WWF or WCW. In other ECW news, Paul Heyman was in Chicago and Los Angeles trying to negotiate cable TV deals.
The Macho Man Randy Savage, welcome to Atlanta.
Ooh, yeah! I want everybody right now to freak out, freak out. The Macho Man is right here. And I'm here for only one reason, and that's to take it to the limit, yeah!
Can you be a little more specific about that, Macho Man? I know you've got to have goals and objectives when you come to an organization, a star of your magnitude, but what specifically do you have in mind?
You're right about that, because a lot of people out there call me hardcore, a lot of people out there call me cold and calloused, a lot of people out there think that I'm living on the edge and that I'm insane in the membrane and that I'm a time bomb and I could go ballistic at any second. And all those things could be true. But it doesn't ignore the fact that I'm here for one reason and one reason only. And it is to confront the man that goes by the name of Hulk Hogan. Now, me and Gene Oakland, I want to ask you a question right now.
Shoot.
Do you know a man that goes by the name of Hulk Hogan that hangs around here?
I hope you're not living in a cave and haven't been in New York, because Hulk Hogan is the WCW heavyweight champion.
He is?
He is the champion.
Well, you know, I think I might have a problem with that, because past, present, and future, the number one wrestler in the universe is the Macho Man Randy Savage. And Hulk Hogan, you're number two. So I don't care if you're in a garbage can, come on out here. I don't care if you're underneath the ring, come crawling over here, because we got to do something man to man. We got a TCB, take care of business. Get him out of here right now.
Well, I don't believe Hulk Hogan is available, but I don't think Hogan's the kind of guy that would ever back down from any kind of a confrontation.
Oh, is that right?
No.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. What I want you to do is tell me a situation where, when, what time that I can meet Hulk Hogan and get this thing resolved.
Real simple. He's going to be at Starrcade on December the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Starrcade?
Starrcade.
December the 27th, Nashville, Tennessee, Music City. Let me tell you something. I'm thinking about something right now. That's kind of cool right now, because I can wait. Good things can wait. I'm going to tell you something, Mean Gene Okerlund. By a hook or by a crook, the Macho Man is going to be at Starrcade. Oh, yeah, I am. And somewhere in the night, I'm going to have eye contact with Hulk Hogan, and one of two things are going to happen. One, I'm going to take my hand and put it out to you, Hulk Hogan, and shake your hand. The other thing that may happen is that I might slap you in the face and spin your head all the way back to Venice Beach, California,
what
put the boots to you.
Thank you very much.
No, no. Stop it right there. I'm going to tell you something right now. Hulk Hogan, Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Macho Man and Hulk Hogan have a date with destiny. Oh, yeah. Starrcade. Dig it.
Third of December, WCW Saturday night. Randy Savage interrupted via voiceover the Eric Bischoff and Bobby Heenan intro announcing his imminent arrival. It's another live edition of WCW Saturday night, with fans being able to vote on their chosen tag match in the main event. WCW are angling for the match to be Harlem Heat versus the Nasty Boys. Lord Steven Regal was out once again scouting Jean-Paul Levesque. It's said the pair will be a tag team going forward, with a possible tag title run being dangled for Levesque, as contract talks between him and WCW are ongoing. The WWF are interested. Levesque will face Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright, at Starrcade, who is out now doing some horrible dancing to techno music. Dirty Dick Slater has joined Colonel Robert Parker's stud stable, replacing Terry Funk. He's been billed as Funk's cousin, although Eric Bischoff actively questioned that on commentary when Heenan said it. Parker said he's discovered someone new, but it's a surprise for now. Johnny B. Badd defeated Bobby Eaton in a WCW TV title defence. Randy Savage then cut his promo on his WCW debut, as you will have just heard. Savage says he will be at Starrcade to confront Hogan. He may shake his hand, or he may just slap him around the face. In the main event, the Nasty Boys defeated Harlem Heat after Sister Sherry got Heat DQ'd by spraying perfume into the eyes of Jerry Sags. On December 4th's main event, Dave Sullivan defeated his brother Kevin Sullivan by DQ after Butcher interfered. Sting came in and ran off Butcher and Kevin after the match. 10th of December, Saturday night, Colonel Robert Parker and Meng are at the police station shown on CCTV. They're in to bail out Blackstop Bully, who was escorted away on Saturday night 2 weeks ago. Bail is $75,000. Parker raises $7,500, but says he doesn't have $75,000. Turns out Bully had some speeding fines as well as 7 counts of assault on a police officer after the incident at Center Stage. Parker visits Bully in his cell, says he's got a job for him and he's going to get him out of there. Bully asks why he should trust him. Things get heated and Parker gets escorted away. In the main event, Jim Duggan defeated Vader by DQ after Harley Race interfered. December 17th, WCW Saturday night. Colonel Robert Parker and Meng return to the jail. This time there are TV cameras with them. A reporter and seemingly government official is trying to get answers over the legitimacy over Parker's money. But this time Parker has the $75,000 to bail out Blacktop Bully. They escort Bully out of the premises to his big rig. Bully says he will beat up whoever Parker wants him to after he bailed him out. Seems like Dustin Rhodes is in their sights. In the main event, we got Dustin Rhodes versus Vader. Dustin attacked both men before the match even began. Vader hit Dustin with the face-first powerbomb, then Race distracted the referee, enabling Vader to throw him over the top rope and not force the disqualification. Vader was setting up for a pile driver on the outside before Hacksaw Jim Duggan ran out with his 2x4 and ran off Vader and Race. December 18th, the Nasty Boys were facing off against Bunkhouse Buck and Dick Slater, but Sister Sherry and Harlem Heat ran out for the DQ, and a 4-on-2 beatdown ensued before a number of jobbers ran out. They got beaten up by the Heat and Buck Slater too. In the main event of main event, Dave Sullivan and Sting versus The Butcher and Kevin Sullivan went to a DQ after the Guardian Angel interfered on behalf of the face team to even up the battle with Avalanche, a constant presence on the outside. Although Sting did strike Angel, it did seem like it played off as an accident. The referee disqualified both teams. December 24th, WCW Saturday night. The Blacktop Bully made his in-ring debut with a submission victory over a jobber with an arm submission. Bully says for 2 years he was writing to the WCW front office wanting a chance, and they wouldn't give him one. Said he waited at ringside for an opportunity, and Dustin Rhodes took the bait, and he was lucky the Atlanta Police Department were there to take him away. On the December 25th WCW main event, Bobby Heenan isn't happy. He says his girlfriend got him a Mercedes for Christmas, but he already has one.
On that night in Nashville, Tennessee, it will go down as the most important night in the history of the WCW. You know, when I slid in through the back door, when I looked at WCW in the eye, and when I challenged Ric Flair and beat him right in the Orlando Arena, I knew the whole course of professional wrestling. I knew the whole course of the WCW would be changed forever and a day. And all the wrestlers around the world forgot where they were at, forgot who they were wrestling, and they all focused on the WCW and Hulk Hogan because it's the only thing that's happening in the wrestling world today. But now that I'm the champion, now that that no-good butcher stuck the knife in my back and twisted a friendship that would have lasted forever, I realize now more than ever, in Nashville, Tennessee, brother, it's Starrcade. That will be the most important day in the history of wrestling, Jimmy Hart. You know, I tried to forget about it for a while, brother. Went back to Venice Beach, California. Did a lot of hanging and banging at Gold's Gym in Venice. And when I was done with the workout, I went back to my little shack in Santa Monica. And as I sat in the garage and stared at my motorcycle, and right next to it, the butchers was sitting, I realized the paint job on the tank, where it showed me and the butcher arm in arm out on Venice Beach, airbrushed on the tank. As I looked at it in detail, I saw a little teeny butcher on his shoulder with an axe in his hand. And the next thing I knew, as I honed in on the tank, I saw that the axe was aimed towards my back, brother. It made me realize more than ever that this was a premeditated plan. From day one, as we rose to the top of the professional wrestling business, the butcher was setting me up, giving me the biggest push he could, just so he could get next to me and pull the carpet out from under me. Well, it's not just Venice Beach, Butcher. It's everywhere I go. From New York City, Tampa, Florida, Tokyo, Japan, North Pole, South Pole, and all points in between. All the Hulkamaniacs want to know, what are you going to do about the situation? How are you going to cut the Butcher, the cancer out of the WCW? And Hulk Hogan, the Department of War Crimes, the Hulkamania Department of War Crimes, has met, and they have decided that Nashville, Tennessee, when the largest arms in the world are pumped to capacity, wrap them around the butcher's waist, squeeze till you hear the snap, crackle, pop, and give no quarter. I've got the green light to take it all the way. And in Nashville, what you gonna do when Hulk Hogan destroys you?
And thank you, Colin, for giving us that TV review. I think from now on in, I think I'm going to try and palm off the TV review, so I'm talking less during each of the shows. But now we'll move on to WCW Starrcade. Kieran, kick us off with the results.
Vader defeated Jim Duggan to win the WCW United States Championship. Alex Wright defeated Paul Levesque. Johnny B. Badd defeated Arn Anderson. The Nasty Boys defeated Harlem Heat. Mr. T defeated Kellyn Sullivan. Sting defeated Avalanche. And Hulk Hogan defeated The Butcher to retain the WCW World Heavyweight Championship.
Chris, what are your overall thoughts on Starrcade?
I was really quite underwhelmed for me. There wasn't really a standout good match on the card. I was quite excited before I watched it, but every match underwhelmed me a lot. Nothing really jumps out as like a highlight for me, really.
Again, I looked at the card beforehand and I looked through it and I could see some sort of like the follow on, or maybe there would be some sort of similar type matches from the previous pay-per-view. But I was quite optimistic, but as it turned out, it was a real mixed bag for me. It was some bits that I quite liked and some bits that I just absolutely hated.
Yeah, it was just a very forgettable show, I think. Just in terms of I kind of disagree with the idea that the card was any good going in. I don't particularly think it was. And every match was fine, but no better or worse. And the card seemed to get just steadily worse as the show went on. And the opener was probably the best match on the card, but I don't think that says that much. And then Vader was really the only standout thing about this show, in that he was involved probably in the best match, and then his promo at the end, which was easily the only noteworthy thing of the show. And Honky Tonk Man's departure, I suppose, is that as well. Anyway, we will start our review. We have Santa Claus in the arena, who's been paid by what looks like Dave Sullivan. Aaron Tiffin sings the national anthem. They then air the Savage promo that aired on Saturday night that you'll have heard earlier, before showing a clip of Hulk Hogan receiving the Wrestler of the Year award from Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine. Hogan told the usual story of his arrival in WCW and the anticipation of his match with Ric Flair. Shockingly, no mention of the Butcher. We then move on to our opening match of the evening. Vader with Harley Race versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan for the United States Championship. The action began in the aisleway. Vader ran down from the ring to attack Duggan on his way out. Duggan got in the ring, attacked Race and threw him to the outside. Duggan posed for the crowd. Duggan hits a 10-punch in the corner, then knocks Vader over the top rope, for those keeping score, not a disqualification this time. Duggan hits a lovely body slam, holding Vader in midair for longer than usual. With the referee distracted by Race, Vader pokes Duggan in the eye to gain some leverage in the match as the pair exchange blows. Bobby Heenan, quote, for Duggan, taking a shower is a high-risk manoeuvre. Vader hits the Vader bomb, but Duggan gets his foot on the rope. Vader goes for a second, but stalls for too long, and Duggan kicks him in the nuts. Vader goes for a moonsault, but Duggan gets out of the way. Duggan goes for his three-point stance clothesline, but when pinning him, Race rakes his eyes to break up the count. A quote from Schiavone, Duggan is the blue-collar champion, to which Heenan replied, that's because he's too dumb to have a good job. Vader jumps from the second rope, but Duggan catches him in the power slam, but Race has the referee distracted. Duggan charged at Race, but ran into his 2x4 Race was holding. Vader hits his face-first powerbomb for the 3 count, and Vader wins the United States heavyweight title. Vader asks the camera, who is the number one contender, while walking off. Kieran, what do you think of this?
Well, first of all, thank God Vader won. That's the main thing, because I don't think I can take much more Hacksaw Jim Duggan, if I'm honest. There's a couple of notes I made on the match, but not much. One was that back elbow by Duggan. I think he came off like the second rope, second inside turnbuckle, and I just that just summed it up for me. Vader was outstanding. For, like I said, I've not seen too much of him, but for a guy that size, the way he moves and the things he can do, absolutely brilliant. And like I said, thank God he won, because then you sort of knew where it was going. They sort of led in with sort of that, they give you the nugget of, well, that US title belt sort of means you're like the next number one contender. So I thought, if Vader wins, that's going to be really good going forward. But overall, the match did nothing for me, really, overall.
Chris?
Pretty much just echo what Kieran said. What Vader can do for a guy his size, that moonsault is just, he didn't connect with it, but it's just so impressive. That was a highlight of the match for me. Aside from that, there wasn't anything that really stood out. I was glad Vader won. It was a decent match, but no better than that for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's, As I say, it probably will sum up the rest of this show that this probably was the best match on the card, and even then it didn't have all that much to it. Kieran, I'm not... Of all of the friends of Hogan, of all of the guys you can look at and go, yeah, he's only got a spot because he's a mate of Hogan, Duggan's the guy I mind the least. I don't think he was great in this match, but he's quite an old-fashioned babyface, and I think him more than Butcher, more than Avalanche, more than a lot of the other Hogan friends, I think he's a guy who can just about hold down a role. And I thought we did a right here, Kieran.
I'll agree with that. I'll give you that one, Bob. That's a good point, that, because, like I said, out of all of me, he's the only one sort of... would you throw this Honky Tonk, sort of, would he be thrown in there as well?
Well, he would be, but he's gone now.
Oh, he's gone now, but... I totally agree, and I'll actually take that point, because out of all of them, at least Duggan gets himself over.
Yeah, he can get a reaction.
He doesn't do that by being Hogan's friend. Yeah.
No, it's paint by numbers. It is old school 80s WWF stuff, but he's still somewhat relevant in front of that audience. I mean, I think Honky Tonk Man was awful. And thankfully he wasn't on this show to stink up the joint again. But at least I look at Duggan and I go, you know what? I prefer other guys in that spot, but I don't think you're holding up a spot that you deserve quite as little as some of the other guys do. Then we move on. We're backstage with the Three Faces of Fear. Butcher has his tombstone with Hulkamania, Rest in Agony, written on it. Not for the first time, Kevin Sullivan saves a Three Faces of Fear promo segment. Sullivan mentions that they have an insurance policy. Quote, the man has been paid, he says. Second match of the evening, Jean-Paul Levesque versus Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright. They're billing this as a big match, both so far undefeated in WCW, although that is mainly just squash matches on WCW Saturday night. Wright rolls out of an armlock into a dropkick and a flying head scissors. Fairly basic opening with little crowd heat, Wright locks in an armlock into a head scissors. After far too long in holes, Levesque slugs Wright with a right hand and just starts brawling. The crowd finally wake up. Levesque hits a snap suplex, but Wright kicks out. Levesque then knocks Wright to the outside. Wright goes for a float over sunset flip from the apron, but Levesque sits out on it. Then we go back to the chin lock. Levesque charges Wright in the corner, who does a backflip out of it. Wright then vaults Levesque up for the three count. Chris, what do you think?
Basically, just go and add what you said. There was far too much chin lock and mat wrestling at the start. It killed the crowd flat, who were fairly loud in the first match, like, to give them credit, because they hadn't had much thus far, but until the midpoint they were fast asleep, and you could understand why. It wasn't terrible, I suppose, is the first.
I get a sense you're going to be saying that a lot tonight, Chris, and I don't think without justification either.
yeah.
I mean, Chris, did you think that Levesque pulled an audible in the middle of that? Because that bit where he kind of they broke away from the rest holes and then like Levesque just started like beating him up, that looked to me like it could have been the sort of thing he came up with on the fly just to try and rescue things.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, especially with the finish of the match, which was just sort of like a nice counter into a roll up. Like, you got the sense that they were just due to sort of proceed with the mat wrestling and show off their technical skills, and then that would happen and that would be the match. But it definitely wasn't working, so it saved it a little bit, but it was still poor.
Kieran?
Yeah, to me, this match sort of encapsulated what I thought about the whole show, or the matches in general within the show, is that everything was just running a bit too long. And the fact that you made the point about the audible sort of feeds into that, because, like you said, I think Levesque sort of saw maybe where the match was going, and like you said, called an audible. But I was actually enjoying the match stuff. And then it's sort of like, well, surely they got to start. It's been like, I mean, I have a stopwatch going just so I can make the notes sort of thing. And it was getting to 3 minutes. And then it got to like 5-6 minutes, and they were still doing all the match stuff. And I was thinking, is it actually going to go anywhere? Because I quite enjoy that as like a slow start in any sort of match.
It felt like a start to a 25-minute match that went about 12 minutes.
Perfect, Bob. That's perfect. That's exactly... You kind of think, well, this is what you do for an Ironman match. If you're going to do 5-6 minutes of the rest holds, or, you know, the headlocks, chin locks. But then as soon as the pace picked up a bit, I enjoyed it a bit more. But it just felt a bit sluggish at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I think the major problem with this is that Alex Wright is not a very good babyface. I don't know whether it's just because he's not experienced enough, because he's only like 19, and whether it's just kind of, you know, they put him in a position where it's like, oh, he's got a good body, he's German, he's got a good look, all of the above. I understand all that. But, like, we want to talk about why Jim Duggan has a spot in WCW. It's for basic babyface 101 that he did in the first match to whip the crowd up, that Wright didn't do in this match. And I think that hurt it. And I think the reason you can tell, I think it would have been an audible from Levesque, was that about 2 or 3 minutes later, they went back to the chin locks. And quiet weather, that it was like, okay, we've kind of got the finish kind of worked out now, I don't know. But this was probably the one match on the card I was more kind of interested in more than any, because both of these, you know, to fill in stuff that we didn't really cover in the news just because it wasn't relevant, both of these guys are viewed by the company as potential big stars. They're both guys that are looking to push into 1995. Jean-Paul Levesque is a guy that apparently WWF are interested in, although I think WCW are not going to let him go. Providing they can sign it to a new contract, obviously. So that there was more interest on that, but I think you saw the way the crowd reacted, which was like, yeah, like, they've been on TV enough, but they've not been involved in anything. Yeah, Alex Wright cut a very awkward promo during one of the episodes of WCW Saturday Night, but that was the first we'd heard from him beyond his awful dancing. And then, you know, Jean-Paul Levesque was terrorising, and now all of a sudden he's French, and they're going to team in up with Lord Stephen Regal there. So, yeah, it wasn't too bad, although one thing I will say as we go further into this show is that for all the matches that follow, you've got a very clear indicator in this match that the crowd aren't going to be very interested in chin locks. And I don't think many people heeded that advice as we go further into the show. We'll move on to Arn Anderson versus Johnny B. Badd. Arn Anderson, well, to fill in this, obviously, Honky Tonk Man, as we covered in the news, got to the arena and found out that he was losing to Johnny B. Badd and was under the impression that he'd be winning. If he'd have bothered to pay attention at the TV tapings, he would have seen that Badd was still the champion come January. And yeah, Honky Tonk Man, that finding out he's losing combined with contractual issues, they just got rid of him. Or he walked, one or the other. So Anderson filled in at fairly late notice. He comes out with Meng and Colonel Robert Parker. Schiavone speculates that Honky Tonk Man decided that it wouldn't be a good idea to face Badd after he hit him with his guitar last month. He then says Honky is stuck in traffic. No sign of Dick Slater or Blacktop Bully, Parker's latest recruits. We start with more train wrestling, with Badd putting a hammerlock on Anderson. Things line up a bit, Badd hits a hip toss, then an arm drag, then drop kicks into the outside. Badd goes for a 10 punch, but Anderson drops him into a lovely spine buster. Anderson gains the upper hand and starts using a myriad of heel tactics to stay in control, including raking Bad's eyes on the top rope and using the rope for leverage in an abdominal stretch. The pair exchange sleeper holds, but Anderson sits out into a jawbreaker. Badd goes for a float over sunset flip from the top rope, but Anderson kicks out. Anderson goes for a leverage pin using the ropes, but the referee spots it. Then Badd rolls up Anderson for the three count and retains his TV title. Chris, what do you think?
It was okay, considering both guys would have just found out they were working with the other one that night, really. When you take that into account, I think it was a decent enough match. The one thing that stood out for me wasn't to do with the match at all. It was Heenan on commentary with the quote, "They should have bombed Nashville instead of Hiroshima," which was a bit startling, to say the least.
That was Heenan taking a bit of a left turn with his heel antics, I suppose.
There was a bit I could have probably, this match could have put me to sleep, but that definitely woke me up a bit when I heard that. So as you said, I'd be saying it a lot, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. As soon as I found out Honky Tonk Man wasn't going to be there, I thought, well, at least you'd be pleased after.
Oh, delighted.
I suppose that was good, but the best bits were that it wasn't Honky Tonk Man, so I think that sums it up.
Kieran.
Yeah, that's the first thing I put was just bullet dodged, because at least we'd missed my mate Honky Tonk from the last pay-per-view, but it was okay. I mean, again, I really like some of the stuff that Johnny B. Badd was. And I always kind of like these matches where they mix people up that are completely different. I mean, I think that was one of the things that I was looking forward to on paper, is they're very, very different, you know, look-wise, moveset-wise, personality-wise. You couldn't get more opposed. And I thought it was okay. And like Chris says, we didn't get Honky Tonk, so it already gets one star. So
no, to fill you in on how the Honky Tonk Man match would have gone, obviously, you know, it would have ended with Honky Tonk Man grabbing his guitar. The referee would have then stopped him using it and Bab would have rolled him up. So yeah, we missed out on nothing there, I would have thought. But no, it was, you know, like most matches on this card, it was like 1.5 stars. It was like fine. I think Chris is right. We've got to give them some kind of exemption, given that, yeah, they only found out they're working together at this late notice. But it wasn't anything to write home about. I mean, Anderson's Spinebuster was very nice. There were some good moments. I wouldn't be at all offended if we got this match again on a bit more notice with a bit more build behind it. I think these two could potentially up their game a bit if they got a bit more of an opportunity. We then cut backstage to a video package as the Nasty Boys picked up the PWI Tag Team of the Year. Speaking of the Nasty Boys, they're up next facing Harlem Heat. The match starts with all four men brawling in the ring. Booker T goes for a crossbody on Sags, but Sags plants him instead. The match once again breaks down to all four men in the ring with the Nasties double-teaming Booker T. The Heat goes to the floor to regroup. Sherry gets involved on a distraction to allow the Heat to regain control. Nobbs goes for a bulldog, but Ray kicks out. Sherry is extremely vocal, screaming on the outside. Both Sags and Nobbs are working out Stevie Ray's arm. Both announce Zach's surprise that the Nasty's strategy is usually just brawling. Heena says that someone has taught them how to wrestle as opposed to how to fight. Stevie Ray pushes Sags up the R-way and drops him onto the guardrail. Sag gets deposited back in the ring, but Heena now have the advantage. Heena, quote, "The toughest one in this whole match is probably Sherry." Sags is now the babyface in peril with the Heat exchanging frequent tags. Sags finally gets a boot up as Ray runs him into the corner, but hitting him with a hard clothesline and Ray flips over in the air. The Heat go for a double team flapjack, but Sags hits a DDT and the crowd go with them. Sherry gets up on the apron and goes to spray his knobs with the perfume. He ducks and Ray gets in the eyes. Sherry then goes to the top rope for a splash, but knobs rolls out the way and Booker T eats that. The Heat recover on the outside and the ref calls for the DQ. Then the Nasty Boys finish things off by rubbing Sherry's face in Sags' armpit. Kieran, what did you think?
Yeah, like last time, this is the one I was looking forward to, mainly because of the Harlem Heat. I'm beginning to like really like them, like look-wise and some of the stuff they can do in the ring. Again, like with the other matches, it just felt a bit too long. And when I saw the way the match was being actually booked, so sort of the actual faces were getting a bit of offense early on, I thought, oh, it might be, you know, it might be one too long. And by the end of it, you could tell, like, especially the Nasty Boys, the way they were slowing down, they were really tired, which is understandable for bigger guys. But I didn't dislike the match. It just wasn't, again, it wasn't anything overwhelming or anything that got me really excited. The finish was okay, and I suppose Sherry had to suffer, and that gives the, you know, they're probably, maybe that was sort of a late change, try and get the crowd back going, which it did. It got the faces some really good cheers from the crowd. The finish did, but it was okay.
Chris.
Yeah, the one thing that stood out for me, I was a bit confused how the Nasty Boys were declared the winners by DQ when Sherry had sprayed one of her own team and then splashed one of her own team. Like, that didn't
I guess it's a DQ for the heel manager interfering, isn't it? I would suppose. I mean, you know, she's clearly on the other team, so the intent was there. It was just their own ingenuity that got them out of it, I would suppose.
Yeah, I do understand. It was just a little very pedantic point to make, but yeah, it did feel like it went too long. It was you felt like, for me, they sort of had the same match sort of twice in one. They were brawling and then they went back to wrestling, and then they brawled for a bit and then went to wrestling. They could have had it the exact same match, just half the amount of time it took, and then it would have been just as good for me. It felt like it went in too long.
It didn't go anywhere after a while, I think was the problem. They kind of, they did their bit and then they went, oh, we've actually got 10 more minutes to fill here. So they kind of did it again. And yeah, it was all right. But again, we fall into the pattern that we always fall into, in that the more Nasty Boys wrestle, the worse it gets. And that you either got to keep them in there for a short time or you've got to have them have a more walking brawl style match. And this wasn't really either of those. But Heat looked good, as we kind of spoke about last month. And you know, it's a, it's not as offensive as it could have been. And one other thing I'll mention on the subject, Harlow Pete haven't actually won the tag titles yet, in TV-wise, but they did win them at a TV tape in the middle of December. I think that's going to... It certainly didn't occur on the December 31st show anyway. I think that's going to come soon, next few weeks on TV. So they're the new tag champions, although obviously weren't here. We cut back to the shot from the PWI ceremony. Sting receiving the award for the most popular wrestler of 1994. We then cut to a backstage promo, and Sting says he's tired of talking. Next up is Kevin Sullivan versus Mr. T. Mr. T is out, and apparently when he signed with WCW a couple months ago, he bought one set of gear, which was refereeing gear, and he's going to use it for everything, as he is wearing his full refereeing outfit for this match. Hayden called him a zebra with a beard. Well, there we go. The match begins, and here's Santa Claus. This is Dave Sullivan walking down the aisleway. Meanwhile, T beats on Kevin in the corner. Kevin then beats T on the outside, and Mr. T ends up laying flat on top of a fallen cameraman on the outside. Jimmy Hart runs out to Dave, dressed as Santa. Jimmy puts his megaphone in Dave's sack, and Dave nails Kevin with the sack with the referee's back turned. I think, at least. Anyway, Mr. T then picks up the win via pinfall. Dave goes to celebrate with the crowd, but Kevin attacks him after the match and drags him into the ring. Kevin then pile drives Santa Claus. Kieran, what do you think?
God, blimey, this was bad.
At least it was this... short.
Oh, I just got... I thought Kevin Sullivan was invoking the berserker with his as he's coming down. I was like, what's going on here? Then you got Santa, and then you got Mr. D coming out in his pyjamas. And I was just... it was bad.
It strikes me as a nice idea on paper, this match. But, like, I mean, as I say, at least it was quick. Chris, what do you think?
Well, you said earlier I was going to be saying things weren't terrible, but the only word I wrote down in my notes for this was terrible.
Yeah, to be fair, this was the low point in the show. I'll give you that. If I said at the start this show didn't have any bad points, this certainly was it.
The one thing that stood out was it was quite amusing, at the very least, when the cameraman tripped over the stairs and... they proceeded to brawl over the cameraman with Mr. T on top of him. That was at least amusing.
Why did the cameraman get up? Like, he seemed to fall down and just stay lying on his back.
It's just when you see his feet, I was...
Oh, yeah, because to clarify this, the cameraman was on his back, still doing his job, and the director thought, screw it, we've got this shot, we're going to use it. So we just get this shot of the cameraman on the floor, feet poking out the bottom and, like, shooting up. I mean, it was certainly unique. If nothing else, it was unique. It was certainly no better than that. But anyway, yeah, it was over, and then Kevin Sullivan pile drives Santa Claus, which is an interesting visual, I guess. Anyway, we get a Hulk Hogan promo. He says he hoped Butcher would come to his senses, says Macho Man makes a mistake, he'll end up just like Butcher. We then get Avalanche with Kevin Sullivan versus Sting. Sting whips up the crowd for the award for most popular wrestler. He's not far from the mark, certainly. The pair engage in a test of strength. Avalanche wins easily. Sting goes to pick up Avalanche for a body slam, but he can't lift him. Avalanche body slams Sting with ease in return. Sting gains some momentum but runs into a body block from Avalanche. Sting then gets dropped with a power slam but kicks out. Avalanche is completely on top. Sting rallies but attempts another body slam and Avalanche simply falls on top of him. Avalanche sets up for his finisher, but poses for too long and Sting rallies, hitting an axe handle from the top and dueling drop kicks. Unbeknownst to Sting, Avalanche squashes the referee in the corner. Sting hits a body slam for a big crowd pop, but Kevin Sullivan gets involved. Avalanche regains the advantage, hits his finish, but Hogan comes out and runs them off with a chair. Another referee calls out and calls a DQ and announces Sting the winner. Chris, what do you think?
I didn't mind it. Avalanche is clearly limited in terms of how much he can do and his sort of stamina. I think... But both guys tried hard. I mean, I didn't mind. I didn't mind the finish. I think Sting looked good. I do really like Sting at this point. But it was slow. And if there was one thing this didn't need, it was another slow match. But, I mean, that was always going to be expected when you've got Avalanche in it. It's not going to be high paced. But, yeah, I thought it was okay.
Here.
again, I sort of knew what I was. You sort of knew what you were going to get. I mean, I will agree with Chris on one thing though, is that Sting and Vader were the standouts for me from the whole show. I mean, I really like Vader, and I really, really like Sting. You can sort of see that if you get someone good to work with, how good of a wrestler and how good of a match you get out of this guy. But again, the thing that drags it down is Avalanche. He gets gassed, you know, after like 2-3 minutes. Everything's sort of slow and cumbersome, which is obvious when you look at the guy's size. But that's sort of no excuse, because they put him in the match, they give him something to work with, but he just can't do it, Bob. He's just so limited with his moveset and what he can do. But it wasn't overly. I mean, it was a step up from the match before, but it kind of didn't get the card going again, which is sort of what the whole show needed.
No, I mean, to be fair, this was about as good as this match is ever going to get, to be fair. I mean, you know, and that's more the fault of the people booking it for booking Avalanche in a position that he probably shouldn't be in. But Sting, as we've seen with Vader matches before, he knows exactly how to wrestle this kind of match. He knows exactly how to wrestle the, even for a guy who's quite tall, he knows how to wrestle the small guy style in terms of size. It was okay. It was no better than that, but it certainly, you know, in a card full of 1.5-star matches, this was a 2-star match. Like, that's probably the best thing I can say about it. And the finish wasn't that bad, you know, quite why, you know, this match of all matches, we can have a referee run out and correctly call a DQ, despite, you know, all the others in the last 18 months where referees have been sat backstage, you want a screwy finish, you want to go and sort it? No, leave it. But, you know, at least with this one, we got a correct DQ call and Sting wins. Jimmy Hart next, back at the PWI ceremony, he picks up his award for Manager of the Year. We then get a video package recapping the history of Hogan and Butcher. And then to the main event, The Butcher with Kevin Sullivan and Avalanche versus Hulk Hogan with Jimmy Hart for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. Butcher begins with a headlock, then punches Hogan in the throat. The crowd rally with Hogan chants. Butcher grabs the microphone, which is wide, and wraps it around Hogan's throat. Apparently that's not a DQ. The brawl continues on the outside, and Hogan hits Butcher with an atomic drop. Hogan then grabs a chair and hits Butcher in the head with it. Again, no disqualification. The brawl, Butcher then drops an elbow from the top, but Hogan rolls out of the way. The crowd are very much into this match. Hogan drops to his knees and bites Butcher on the forehead. Hogan then goes for a 10 punch in the corner, but on the 10th punch decides to bite Butcher on the forehead again. Butcher regains control in the match and locks in a sleeper hold as Hogan begins to fade. This is a callback to the end of the clash, where Butcher put out Hogan in the sleeper following the conclusion of the main event. Butcher mistakenly thinks he's won the match as the referee does the old lift up the arm and drop it, but Hogan is playing possum. Hogan kicks out of Butcher's pin and then hulks up. Out comes Sutherland and Avalanche, who wandered off after the start of the match. Hogan fights off all three of them, then drops a leg on Butcher, wins the match, and retains the title. We'll come on to what happened next in a minute. Kieran, what do you think of the match?
It's just the same sort of Hogan booking. The only difference here was, I mean, he uses a chair, he does the biting. He can get away with it, but sort of no reprimand or anything at all. A load of back rakes, even a chest rake. It was just like, it seemed to set a world record for back rakes, is what I thought. I liked seeing Macho, but I would have kind of preferred a bit more ambiguity.
We'll get to that bit in a sec. I want to compartmentalise this. Chris, what do you think?
I really didn't enjoy this at all. There were 4 different points where the ref could have called a DQ and didn't. It was the choke him with the cord, the chair shot from Hogan, then he chokes him with the chair, then he bites him. Just none of them were mentioned at all.
And he didn't call for the DQ when Avalanche and Sullivan ran out either. I know Hogan beat them up, but it's still a disqualification.
Yeah, exactly. So I did that, just like stuff like that, when it's just, that's just lazy. That's just really poor. I can't be dealing with that.
But, to be clear, this wasn't a DQ match, or if it was, they never mentioned it.
I mean, is it a thing, Bob, where that it's quite inconsistent, this sort of thing? Because you sort of get one match where people are getting DQ'd for spraying their own talent in the face. It'll come to this one, and, you know.
I think we just file it under WCW booking and try not to blow a gasket over it, I think. But yeah, I mean, The one thing I'll say, the crowd were way more into this match than they had any right to be, and I think that's just more pro Hogan than anything. And I'll give them a little bit of credit. You know, the video package before the match set up quite nicely the Butcher story. You know, the whole thing of, you know, they were best friends. They showed some footage of them in WCW in the last 6 months with Butcher by Hogan's side. So there was a bit of a backstory in this, but Butcher is an imposter in this kind of main event. He's barely wrestled. That's the thing. He's barely worked since Hogan arrived, because he arrived with Hogan. And you're thinking, why is he in this match? You know what I mean? We've got kind of Sting and the co-main, and that's the best match you've got. We've gone from Hogan and Flair to Hogan and Brutus Beefcake. And that's a step down. The match wasn't any good. I mean, again, it's just difficult because you're just waiting for the inevitable. It's like they've done nothing to lead me to believe that Hogan was going to win it. Hogan was going to lose it, sorry. It was fine. But anyway, after the match, Hogan grabs a chair and out comes Randy Savage. Obviously, it's the 3-on-1 beatdown was scheduled. Savage stands in the corner with the three faces of fear and starts directing traffic. But then, with their back turned, Savage sides with Hogan, attacks Sullivan, and the crowd erupt. They round them off, Hogan carrying a chair and Savage clutching Hogan's title belt. They didn't really tease anything with that. They didn't really kind of play up that point. Savage and Hogan shake hands, and the Mega Powers are back together again, says Shivani. Kieran, you were going to make a point about Savage. What do you think?
Yeah, I just preferred a bit more ambiguity. You could still have him sort of attack the three faces of fear, because he just doesn't like them, and they're, you know, well, you know, they're a bit of an arsehole, basically. Yeah. You could have had just with him and Hogan. I thought you could have just, you know, that thing about, you know, because obviously there's going to be that instant. Everybody knows what the Mega Powers was and what happened and what that feud did. Everybody knows. Whether they acknowledge it or not is a different story. But you just felt if there was a bit more ambiguity, it could have been such a moment. If it doesn't have to attack Hogan, he doesn't have to shake his hand. Just to have a stare down and then walk off, I would have thought it would have been a lot better.
I mean, Chris, with the title belt thing, it looked like they could have done that just with slightly better announcing and some slightly different kind of directing on Savage and Hogan.
Well, it definitely looked like that was the kind of thing they were going for. I mean, he held the belt for long enough, and there was definitely there was a vocal sort of like between the two. That was definitely what they were driving at, and it just wasn't really alluded to by the commentators, really. Bobby Heenan sort of, I can recall only really mentioning Savage holding the boat when he was telling Hogan to hit him with it. It wasn't that he wanted the title, but it wasn't used in that way at all, which was really strange. But, I did quite enjoy it. I mean, I understand what Kieran's saying, but I think it's clear they are just going in the other direction. Like, I think that's just how they're playing it rather. Yeah, I didn't mind it. I liked the end of the show more than the match that preceded it.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think, as we have with the Savage promo at the start, they're going to get to Savage versus Hogan, but I think it's very much they want them to be together as a team first, and there's various different scenarios they're playing out. One I heard was Vader defeating Hogan for the title, then Savage defeating Vader for the title. Obviously, this is over the course of 6 months. Then Savage turns heel, and then Hogan can chase Savage for the title, which I don't actually think is that bad an idea. But I think certainly to begin with, it's Savage as a babyface. But at least then, when Savage turns heel, they can use the promo at the start. They can even use that shot, because they've got a shot of Savage holding the title. Even though they didn't kind of play up on it much, didn't have a very obvious stare down, they've got a callback with that now, which I think is something good. Anyway, we go backstage, and Hogan is backstage in the locker room with Savage and a number of other babyfaces, interviewed by Mean Gene Oakland. In comes Vader, and we get to hear this.
Mr. Popsicle! Hogan! The whole world is watching, and the whole world is listening! Look into my eyes and listen to what I have to say to you. You're living with a demon, brother. And a demon is called fear. That's right. For the first time in your life, you're afraid. For the first time in your career, you're afraid. You're afraid to be standing here next to the man right now, brother. I can see it. I can see it in your eyes. I can feel it in your soul. I can hear the Hulkamaniacs all over the world. They're saying, Hulkster, Vader is the number one contender. He is the heavyweight, U.S. heavyweight champion. Are you afraid to wrestle Vader? Have you lost the will to be the best? Have you lost your desire? Have you lost your gut? Where's your soul? Are you going to stand up and be a man that you're supposed to be? Please. Who is running this company, Mr. Bockwinkel? Hogan, are you? I want to know, and I want an answer. Because, brother, you're looking at the man. I have no fear. I feel no pain. I am the number one contender. I am the U.S. champion. What else is there left for me to do? Brother, you know how you kill a snake? You cut its head off, and it dies. And guess what, brother? Hulkamania dies with it. So I'm calling you out. Right now, punk. I'm calling you out. You either know something, Vader. You either. Maybe you're right, brother. Maybe it's Vader time right now.
Chris, what do you think of this Vader promo?
I really enjoyed it. For me, the whole thing, it went on a little bit too long to then be preceded by a big brawl, but it was exciting. I like Vader, and Hogan versus Vader is definitely exciting, especially when you've just come off that main event. That's something to get excited about, big time.
Karen?
It left me with a good feeling of where it was going to go after. Like Chris said, after that type of promo coming after that kind of match, it just gets you that little bit excited again. And like I said, there's something about Vader, when you combine the fact of the size of the guy, what he can do in the ring, and he's the intensity of the guy, you honestly believe what the guy's saying. And brilliant. Promo was brilliant.
Oh, easily the best part of the show, and easily the only really noteworthy thing of the show. Like, the rest of it isn't really much of anything, but Vader's great. And what I liked as well was that they seem to change direction with Vader, because he won the number one contendership in September, and they kind of seem to forget about it. But I like that it was almost kind of like they even if it was more kind of happenstance rather than anything they planned, they kind of made it said, look, I won this, I won the US title, you can't ignore me anymore. And I even like the fact that Hogan didn't do a 90-second promo. He just stood there and then shoved Vader, and they teased the brawl. I thought that was excellent. It was a really good segment to end a pretty flat show. And as that kind of dispersed, we then had Mean Gene Oakland quickly interviewing Nick Bockwinkel. Bockwinkel said that Vader's demands are very much legitimate. And that will do that for this. There isn't really anything from, because we had Colin do the TV review for the stuff before WCW Starcade. But there isn't really anything else to cover there, because the last Saturday night of the year, which is a recap show, very good if you can find it. And the only real thing of note was right at the end of the show, Tony Schiavone mentioned the possibility of a Cruiserweight Championship coming in 1995. Finally, Brian Pillman will have something to do. So we'll get to that when we get to it. Chris, your overall thoughts on this show and a score rating out of 10?
I didn't enjoy the show. The best match was solid at best. For me, a 3 out of 10 for me. Yeah, I didn't enjoy it. The end was the best bit, and, well, I suppose it was because of the segment and because it was actually ending. So, yeah.
Kieran?
Yeah, pretty much the same. A lot of it was lackluster. Like I said, the overall thought I had was each match was gone on, it just went on 5 minutes too long. There's bits I could pull out of each match if I wanted to, and the promo at the end was really good. I mean, the promo actually bumps it up to a 4 out of 10 for me. The promo was that good.
I'm with Chris, 3 out of 10. I think if I was going to give this show a name, I'd probably call it 1.5 Starcade, I think, because that was basically kind of every match, really. You know, Vader and Duggan at the start was fine. Avalanche's theme was okay. Everything else, like, you know, if you've got 3 hours to kill, find this show. But if you're looking for some decent action, I wouldn't go anywhere near this. It was very slow and ploddy. And again, I probably, one of those 3 points was probably the Vader promo at the end. It was really that bad. And it's not to say it was a horrendous show. It was just nothing of any note. And, you know, irrelevant wrestling is probably worse than really bad wrestling. And that was certainly what this was. Anyway, I'll do that for now, and after the break, we'll be discussing ECW.
Many who believed we would never see this man again, the man standing to my left.
You're such luck.
I'm sure the public enemy had figured they eliminated Paulie Dangerously from professional wrestling and this planet. However,
you see, I've always been the guy that everybody united against to stop. Whether it be with Austin Idol and Tommy Rich, whether it be with the original Midnight Express, whether it be with the head-shrinking Samoan SWAT team, whether it be with Arn Anderson and Bob Heenan and the entire rest of the Dangerous Alliance, it's always been Paulie Dangerously and the men that I've been behind that had to be stopped, that everybody joined together to stop. But now there's somebody on the scene worse than we've ever been. Now there's somebody on the scene who sinks to lower depths than we've ever gone to, and who can rise to the occasion better than the Dangerous Alliance ever did. Fly Boy Rocco Rock and Johnny Guns are at the top of the heap, and even Paulie Dangerously is running scared. Because nobody on the face of the planet, since they came into this stinking, miserable sport 15 months ago, has been able to stop them.
Until you run across me. Because there's two things that Flyboy Rocco Rock and that fat piece of crap Johnny Grunge have forgotten about. Number one, I'm with the team that puts every single former member of the Dangerous Alliance to shame. Sabu and Taz, the most indestructible tag team that has ever been placed on this planet. And number two, you forget what I'm all about. You forget what Paulie Dangerously is capable of. And you forget what I've done in the past. And with the men that I've done in the past with, imagine this. Now I've got Shampoo and Taz. Now I have the most homicidal, the most suicidal, the most genocidal tag team that has ever been brought together ever in the history of not just professional wrestling, but of any damn sport that has ever been competed with.
With Paulie Dangerously.
You want to live dangerously with Shampoo and Taz? Public Enemy? At Holiday Hell 2, you will curse the pimp that impregnated your mother for the day that you were born.
And we are back now. We're looking for ECW. I'm being joined by Del Muir. Del, good evening.
Hi, Bob.
Del, let's start with the ECW news for the month.
Yeah, biggest news in the month for December, Bob. We've got the return of Sherry Martel in ECW this month, as we spoke about last month. We've also got a debut in Brian Pillman as well. Two of these cut a promo and advertised a hardcore phone line. They basically showed that they've never missed a beat, especially Sherry and Shane Douglas. The three of them then shot on WCW's quote-unquote entertainers and stated that they belong in the big leagues. Another big debut this month saw former WCW champion Ron Simmons arrive in Philadelphia. The first black world champion with team with Too Cold Scorpio. He would take on Douglas and Pillman in a match we'll be reviewing shortly. In other news, quite a big deal coming out of ECW this month with regards to Sabu. He's actually signed a 6-month deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Now, because it's New Japan, Sabu will still be able to work ECW shows, but it does also set up a potential dream match with Jushin Thunder Liger. Sabu made his first appearance a couple of weeks ago with a run-in at a recent New Japan show, and he's due to be making his in-ring debut in the new year. We're also receiving reports that Steve Richards, a rookie in ECW, his recent nods to Scotty the Body Flamingo might actually be in light of the former Johnny Polo coming into ECW. Polo might be more widely known to WWF fans as the former manager of the tag team, the Quebecers, Johnny Polo, but we will have more on this as we hear it. Tommy Dreamer and Sandman's long-running feud, it's shown no sting to stop them at the minute as they were in action again this month after Sandman's fake retirement angle at November to November. Tommy would team up with Cactus Jack, and Sandman would again pair up with his previous rival, Tommy Cairo. The four of them would make headlines this month with their match at Holiday Hell. It involved more crowd participation with regards to weapons and a cane shot to Cairo's new manager, Angel, the Virgin Princess. More details on this, again, we'll have another match review later on in the show. And lastly, Bob, seems that ECW head creative Paulie Dangerously caught last month's podcast as Shane Douglas a lot more strongly featured on TV this month. Further to the return of Sherry and the debut of his friend Brian Pillman, he would defend his ECW title against Ron Simmons and again continue his 5-star promo run.
Pick up the phone, I say your name no more. But unlike you, Ric Flair, there is one man WCW has spawned one man that does have enough guts to come up and face the man with the greatest athletic ability in the sport today, Ron Simmons. But this Saturday night in ECW Arena, Ron Simmons, you will come up on the short end of the stick. Because just like in the day when the Holy of Holies was considered sacred, so is the franchise's dressing room. And as this water pours over my head, I'll sit here with a chuckle, with a good feeling deep down inside of my heart, Ron Simmons, because love me or hate me, every fan in that building that night will see exactly why I've called myself franchise from day one in ECW. Every single fan that night, including you, Ron Simmons, will know why Extreme Championship Wrestling is now called Extreme Championship Wrestling and not Eastern Championship Wrestling. I've hoisted this organization onto these great shoulders, and I've taken it where no wrestling organization has ever gone before. I've not done it with steroids. I've not done it with entertainment. I've not done it with clowns. What I've done it with is sheer ambition. Blood, sweat, and tears, Ron Simmons. Something that you say you've got because you came from the Jets. Well, let me tell you something, Ron Simmons. What beats inside this chest is the heart of a man that claims to be the best and does it, shows it, every damn single night I go out into that ring. Ron Simmons, this Saturday night, in this version of the Holy of Holies, my sacred room, where no one but the franchise dares enter. When all is said and done, Ron Simmons, you'll be nothing more than fodder for the franchise. Nothing more than just one more stepping stone on my way to greatness as I continue to fly. I said it once before, Ron Simmons, an edict that my father told me when I was just a boy. You can walk with the crowds or soar with the eagles. This Saturday night, Ron Simmons, in Extreme Championship Wrestling Arena, I take you as one more launch pad for the eagle taking off. This Saturday, Ron Simmons, the franchise flies with the eagles.
Delph, let's start with the TV review.
Yep, December 6th show, Bob, as we touched on in the news, Shane Douglas reuniting with Sherry Martel. Douglas would cut a promo confirming that Stunning Steve Austin for WCW was injured, then shooting the WCW locker room, actually offered refunds to all in the crowd for the lackey Stunning Steve. Sherry then announced that Steve Austin's replacement would be Brian Pillman, and as again we touched on the news, Tokold Scorpio and Ron Simmons would then later be teaming up to go against these two. Simmons and Scorpio cut a solid backstage promo stating that they are the true rags to riches tale in ECW, and that Stunning Steve isn't actually injured, but he's running scared of them. Brilliant match, Bob, as we've touched on before. ECW don't really have the pay-per-view model at the minute, but there is definitely some good matches on the weekly show, Hardcore TV. This is the first one that we're going to touch on in the month. As you say, it's Tuco Scorpio and Ron Simmons, and they're going up against Brian Pillman and the franchise Shane Douglas. Start of the match, we've got Douglas actually leaving Pillman's side and welcoming the team of Scorpio and Simmons into the ring. Douglas then comes back out with a chair. Sherry then arms herself with it, and Simmons and Douglas go at it in the ring. There's a neckbreaker for the franchise that gains the upper hand, but a cheap shot to Scorpio before choking out Ron Simmons in the ropes. Scorpio gets tagged in. Douglas works him over and then tags in Pillman. Big thing in this match, really the solid tag team of Pillman and Douglas really working well together. Simmons gets back into the ring. They're a bit of a dubious handshake offer from Brian Pillman, but Ron then works him over, nails a spine buster, and as Pillman goes for the tag, Douglas avoids it, seemingly afraid to get into the ring with big bad Ron. Scorpio gets into the ring. Douglas then takes the tag, goes for a tombstone, but Scorpio reverses it, gets into a pin attempt that Pillman breaks up. Really solid tag team, as we say, throughout the full match. There's a lovely double overhead suplex for Pillman and Douglas on Ron Simmons. Gets a two count, but Simmons regains the momentum, managing to get a double clothesline on the both of them. He slams Shane Douglas. Scorpio goes for a splash for the top rope, but the franchise blocks it. Works over two cold, really looking as if they've got the match in hand at this point. They goad Ron Simmons and the apron, distract the referee, again working well as a pair, and even managed to get a stun gun on Two Cold Scorpio. It was a bit of a match to stunning Steve. Pillman then looks to have the match won as he's got the pin on Scorpio, but Sherry then actually gets Two Cold's foot onto the ropes. Sherry obviously sitting at the minute with Shane Douglas and Brian Pillman. Sherry then tells Douglas to trust her. Nothing to worry about. And later on there are referee bumps. Sherry goes to the top rope, as we've seen her in WCW a couple of times in the last few months. But again, she hits Shane Douglas. Simmons managed to get the tag in. Power slams Douglas, gets the win. Post-match, Bob, bit of dissension in the ranks here with the new trifecta. Sherry actually loses her top and ends up showing that a photograph of Ric Flair is in her bra. Douglas then, as we've seen in the last couple of months as well, loses the plot at this, rips up the photo and then actually pile drives the former sensational one in the middle of the ring. He grabs a microphone, calls Sherry a slut, calls Ric Flair a piece of shit, and the crowd strongly on Shane Douglas's side.
Yeah, the match was good. I don't think it was any better than that, and I probably got to follow, so I was actually a little bit disappointed in that it was disjointed, and they kind of set up before the match, and they didn't have long to set this up, given that they obviously had to reset without Austin. But they set up before the match that there was kind of going to be, you know, Pillman and Scorpio, who's the best high flyer, and we never really got that, to any major degree anyway. We had Douglas and Simmons, who... I don't know if Simmons is a strong enough foil to be a hot program with Douglas.
Straight in and man with the franchise, yeah.
I mean, not in the sense that he's not at the level. In many ways, he's above the level Douglas is at. It's kind of more, I just don't think the ECW crowd care enough about Ron Simmons for him to be a good opponent for Douglas. That all being said, the finish was very good. The running, well, not the running power slam, but kind of Douglas bounces off the ropes, jumps towards Simmons, who catches him and then like turns it straight into a power slam, which was a really nice finish. The ending angle I thought was pretty good. I mean, it was a bit hokey. I mean, you got Joey Styles, who in theory is on live commentary, who can see that, you know, Sherry's got a picture of a flare on her chest, which is like incomprehensible, really. inconceivable rather. But I given that Douglas has basically been feuding with Ric Flair since his feud with Terry Funk finished, and when I say that, he hasn't been feuding with Flair at all, he's just been mouthing off about this was about as good a closer to this book as we were ever going to get. In that Flair was never going to be there. So to get Sherry to tease that dissent and then to have Douglas, and that's the thing, I talk about Douglas and Simmons not being a great mix. Douglas ended the match as the babyface at the end of the segment. By the time he piled in Sherry, that was him as most popular guy in the building.
Yeah.
What do you think, Del?
I thought it was really good seeing them, Pillman and Douglas together, Bob, to be honest. As you say, it's kind of more set up for... You want to see Flying Brian going up against Two Cold Scorpio. The two of them have got the high flying ability. Two of them have got that kind of similar stature that you can really see them pulling off a good match. Simmons and Douglas has got a bit of potential for me. I mean, it is two. Douglas is obviously the biggest star that these guys have got. You've got Ron Simmons coming in, former world champion. It does make sense. It was a decent enough tag match, but I say for me the highlight it was definitely Douglas and Pillman working together. But hopefully later in the kind of time, if we get Ron Simmons coming back to make his appearances, then they can build it up into a rivalry between Douglas that the fans can really get involved with.
Del, on with the TV review.
Yeah, just the last bit for the December 6th, Bob. Public Enemy again doing a pre-tape segment, just really showing how good they can do funny. The Enemy were outside a strip club, basically running a promo on Sabu and Paulie Dangerously building up to a match later in the month. And what we do see here for a little bit of a change, as opposed to it being Rocco Rock carrying the promo skills, I actually see pretty decent delivery from Johnny Grunge in this. And that pretty much wrapped us up for the December 6th show, Bob, if you want to talk to us about the 13th.
Yeah, certainly will. We start December 13th with Douglas cutting a promo on Simmons. He apologises to Flair for being, quote, what he no longer is, and he vows to never speak of him again. That pretty much is the end of Douglas and Flair, whatever that was worth. Tommy Cairo backstage with a new manager called the Virgin Princess Angel. We'll cover that more later on. Jason has a spot on the Hardcore 5-9. He says Dean Malenko will be defending his TV championship. Cactus Jack cuts a great promo on Kevin Sullivan and WCW. Woman comes and distracts him, and Sandman comes from behind and nails him with the Singapore cane. We cut to the ring. Dreamer and Sandman are kind of having a match with Tommy Cairo present. Cairo and Sandman double-team Dreamer with canes, outrun Cactus Jack, and the four brawl, with Cairo and Sandman very much getting the upper hand in a bloody segment.
You know something, Tommy Dreamer? In spite of the blood that flowed down my face, in spite of the welts raised all over my back, in spite of the pain and the hatred seething through this twisted mind, I can't help but smile. Because they have no clue as to what they've gotten themselves into. They don't have a clue. You see, Tommy Dreamer, they don't have a clue! I made my reputation in this sport the old-fashioned way. I earned it! By putting wrestlers out of this sport. Good wrestlers! Young wrestlers! Wrestlers with a future, and I did it for the enjoyment, just to prove I could. And now, they've done the single nicest thing they could possibly do, Sandman. Woman, you've given me the gift of life, you see? You've given me a reason! You've given me a reason! Tommy Dreamer didn't need a reason. He had one already, and I watched this band get beaten and beaten. Worse than anything I'd ever took. And I stood there and debated time and time again, should I go out and help Tommy Dreamer? But deep inside, there was this thought that said, no, Cactus Jack. Not because he doesn't deserve to be bailed out, but because he doesn't want it. You see, Tommy Dreamer's been on a quest. Prove he is a man. Prove he's tough enough to take the toughest and extreme championship wrestler. Well, Tommy, the quest is over. Anyone doubts you shouldn't even be in the arena. But you didn't come up and help me out of selfish reasons like I did. You see, I walked into your match because I wanted a piece of the Sandman, just a little piece. You laid your body across the beaten Cactus Jack because you cared. Because you were a friend, so I'm saying, look into my eyes. We don't need a handshake to seal the deal. We're teammates this Saturday night. And Sandman, Tommy Cairo, woman, you have no idea what those implications mean. I'm going to go home tonight and know I won't sleep a wink. And know I'm not going in the shower because I want the taste of steel iron. I want the caked on blood all over my eyes. Because I want to remember every swing of that stick. And because even more so, this reminds me of victory. So, woman, you want to go out there and make threats about my body parts? Look at me! I don't give a damn! The more parts that I lose, the less I have to lose! So you're looking at two men who are going to let it all hang out this Saturday night. Tommy Dreamer! He ain't no pretty boy. He's a man! Maybe nature gave him these looks, but he earned the guts! He earned the heart, and it's all his. And Sandman, you can't take it away from him. Tommy Cairo, you can't take it away from him. But I've got this Jack, and I will take away from you whatever I want. And right now, I want your souls. Bang, bang!
Dal, what do you think of this Cactus Jack promo?
It's unbelievable, Bob. I mean, we talked about him before in WCW seemingly getting neutered a little bit with the bumps he was taking. He wasn't getting the mic time. We kind of seen him making that challenge to really be in the top programs and promos like we just heard. Just, they really just show why he should be getting that TV time, whether it's for the bumps that he's taking, the promos that he's cutting, he's dragging Mikey Whipwreck really just to another level. And I mean, that promo, we've talked about this kind of ourselves. I mean, Tommy Dreamer has never looked better, and he never done a thing That's no, just looking at cap.
Yeah, I should probably, because obviously we're on a podcast, so you can hear the promo, but you can't see it. This is kind of a promo cut in the aftermath of the brawl, when, as I say, Jack and Dreamer basically get their asses handed to them. So we cut backstage and they're in the locker room. It's just those two on their own. Jack's got his head all bandaged up. The bandages are all bloody. He's all cut up. And then you've got Dreamer there, who probably looks a bit too clean cut, given that he's supposed to have taken a beating. But come what may, Dreamer stood there in a hoodie and he's just flanking Jack, looking probably the best Dreamer has ever looked.
Yeah.
It just that looked perfect. So that was kind of the frame, all that. Carry on.
But it's really just mesmerizing stuff, Bob, as we've just heard there. Cactus is just listening to him. It's absolutely captivating when you see it kind of joined up on TV as well. And he's standing there like Terry Butcher when he's got the big bandage on his head covered in blood. It's just absolutely incredible to watch and listen to as well.
Apologies to those non-Brits who don't understand the Terry Butcher reference. Then we will move on to December 20th. Del, back to you.
Yeah, December 20th, we've got Joey Styles doing a cold open at ringside, and kind of much to the fans' dismay, Christmas episode, we've got Santa Claus being introduced. The fans, as I say, aren't really on side with us, and there's just an absolutely raucous 911 chant. On cue, the big man comes out, manages to get rid of Santa Claus, but then out come the pit bulls, and we've got a match beginning with 911 taking on the two of Jason's pit bulls. Early upper hand for Jason's guys, but 911 is just so over. He's got an absolutely commanding presence in the ring. Jason distracts them a little bit. The pit bulls manage to combine and get a choke slam onto 911, but then at the kick out after two, 911 gets up, double choke slam onto the both of the pit bulls, gets the three, absolutely killer push on the big guy. And we cut to backstage, bit of dissension with Jason and the pit bulls backstage. The Rottens are sitting there, the Bad Breed, Dean and Axel Rotten, kind of trying to get some digs into the two pit bulls. The pit bulls then attack them back, building up their heat after losing to 911. And it really takes the full locker room to break these guys up. Moving on, Bob, we've got another match we're going to review here as well, alluded to earlier on with the Cactus Jack promo. It's going to be Cactus Jack teaming up with Tommy Dreamer, and they're taking on the Sandman and Tommy Cairo. Crowd really hot for this. Angel, the Virgin Princess, as we said earlier on, is out with Tommy Cairo. Seemed a bit of a strange introduction to her over the couple of weeks previous, but seeing them at ringside, it does make a lot more sense. The gimmick really fits more now. Women in Sandman kind of try and
talk us through the Angel thing, because I think it needs to be explained.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a strange one. Cairo's obviously come back. He's dealt with Miss Peaches before. There was the full retirement situation that we had in November to remember last month, but now he's got a new valet. I was really say before a manager called Angel, and it's she's kind of built up as like a virgin princess in Cairo's mind. But for anybody that's seen her, or just to kind of give her not with too much allusions to her past, she certainly doesn't kind of fit the bill with the Virgin Princess. But I mean, it does, I don't know about you, Bob, but for me, it does kind of fit Cairo. He's a kind of strange, especially with this kind of heel gimmick that he's got these days. It's a strange one to try and kind of pair him up with somebody, especially that we've maybe seen Miss Peaches before. I thought it kind of worked with him. I don't know about you.
Well, I mean, you know, she was out there wearing a wedding dress and cowboy boots. It was odd. I'm going to let it play out, because it makes so little sense that it might be leading somewhere.
It might just work, yeah.
Yeah, but go on, carry on with your match review.
Yeah, the match review, we've got Women in Sandman coming out as usual, in Metallica at the start. They kind of try to ham up the kind of bad guy side here. Obviously, we've seen how over Sandman was with the crowd at the end of November to remember, but they do try and kind of play up to the bad guy role here, especially going up against Tommy Dreamer and the other side. There is definitely a noticeable kind of drop in the cheers for the Sandman and women, but they're still definitely over. And I mean, women looks genuinely evil at this point, but they still are really over with the crowd. We start with a bit of a walk and brawl. We've got Cactus and Tommy against Cairo and Sandman. Again, we go to the outside and we've got more fan interaction as well as they turn it on with the weapons. Cactus gets a bacon tray for the crowd, levels the Sandman, and then for the third time in a month, third month in a row, should I say, Bob, we've got the obligatory frying pan spot. We've got Cactus then just basically in his element with these weapons coming into it. Dreamer then manages to pull a hockey mask from somewhere in the crowd, headbutts Cairo with the hockey mask on, and Cactus rocks the Sandman with two pretty brutal looking unprotected chair shots. Cairo and Sandman take a bit of stock on the outside before Dreamer and Cactus then do a lovely spot with Dreamer back body dropping Cactus from the ring over the ropes, lands on Cairo and Sandman. Cactus then takes some cane shots, Singapore cane shots for Tommy Cairo. Dreamer then goes for a suicide senton over the ropes again to try and help Cactus out, but then misses everybody, takes a horrible looking back, flat back bump onto the concrete in the outside. Cactus tries to help him out at this point, and it kind of develops then into a bit of a kind of standard tag match, kind of going away for the brawl, whether that was called in the fly with that bump for Dreamer, we don't know, but it goes into a kind of standard tag match. After that, we've got Cairo taking his corner, Cactus taking his corner as well, and we've got Sandman and Dreamer in the ring. Sandman's pretty dazed at this point, obviously, after the frying pan shots and the weapons on the outside, but he does hit a lovely flying uppercut onto Cactus Jack, suplexes him over the ropes, and then he gets back up to the top rope. We thought we might be seeing another attempt at his kind of belly flop elbow that we kind of seen last month, but he does hit, to be fair to him, quite a lovely leg drop for the top rope. Cairo gets into the ring, then strikes Cactus with a chair shot to the back of the head. Again, we kind of get a bit of a brawl on the outside, but back in the ring we get a couple of scoop slams from Sandman onto Dreamer. Again, working over that lower back they hurt earlier on. Sandman repeats his 360 degree pile driver, and Tommy Dreamer, Cactus coming in to break up the pin. Cairo comes in, bit of a brawl with Cactus, but as he goes for a back body drop on Jack, he reverses it into a DDT, gets the win. Similar to earlier on, Bob, we've then got a bit of a post-match angle. We've got Tommy Dreamer and Cactus Jack with the canes in the ring. It's kind of strange to hear and strange to see as well. We've then got Cactus Jack seemingly acting as the voice of reason here, managing to get the cane off of Tommy as the valets enter the ring. Tommy looks as if he's set to hit the Virgin Princess Angel, Tommy Cairo's new valet, but Jack manages to get the cane off him. Next thing we know, Cactus then levels Angel out with the cane itself. So, I mean, it looks as if he's going to be the voice of reason, but again, we've got another one of these extreme moments that the ECW really deliver on. And I mean, the crowd lap it up, they go wild after Cactus gets the cane shot to Angel, and then we've got Dreamer and Cactus doing the bang bang gesture as we fade to black. What do you think of this, Bob?
Well, I'm just thinking it's not the best show for man or woman violence, I suppose.
We've got Pale Driver and Sherry, and then obviously we're getting the cane shot on Angel there as well, yeah.
It fit the four guys involved, given that Cactus Jack is the best worker in that match by a mile, and I don't think he's that good a worker either, in terms of wrestling anyway. He's an excellent brawler. It fit all of involved. It was probably a bit too disjointed to be more than a good match. But it's the kind of match we're slowly coming to accept from ECW every now and then, just kind of the walking brawl on the outside.
Yeah.
There's kind of bumps I'd rather they weren't taking, like in terms of, we've got Dreamer doing the suicide sent onto the outside. Like, the camera missed that. I mean, right, we saw him like splat on the ground. And we had kind of Cactus Jack taking his obligatory concrete bump where I think it was a body slam from Sandman.
Yeah, Sandman suplexed him over, and it's just, I mean, I don't know whether it's as if they're kind of trying to make these into the kind of calling card to ECW. But as you say yourself, I mean, we've got four guys in the ring here. Two of them could quite easily be crippled with those bumps to the outside. I mean, I don't know whether the Dreamer one was planned. It looked as if it was a bit kind of called in the fly, especially after it, but it is brutal to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I know you want to make a name for yourself, and I know you want to entertain the crowd, but there's a way of going 95% of the way, doing 30-40% of the damage to yourself.
Yeah.
And they need to be smarter with that. But it was all right. It was a nice brawl. I mean, I tell you what, like, if Sandman can do that leg drop, like, put the bloody elbow drop from the top rope away. That was fire.
That's that. Why are we seeing that when he can deliver it? Yeah.
And the finish was very good. The Cactus Jack DDT. I mean, I thought Tommy Caro popped up a bit quickly afterwards. The stuff with Virgin Princess Angel, I'm going to wait and see. It doesn't really make sense to me at the moment, but it's only been a couple of weeks. It was fine. What did you think, Del?
I thought it was really good. I mean, I'm not a, to be quite honest, Bob, I'm not a great fan of tag team wrestling. I think we've got to a point in 94 where we can see quite
a tag team match.
Well, that's it. I mean, we can see quite a lot of it's formulated, and when you get into ECW, it's kind of like the rules just go out the window. We see these brawls. There was some good kind of in-ring stuff as well that kind of developed halfway through. As we say, we've got Sandman coming off the top rope match, we're looking pretty decent. There's a couple of bumps in there that are really unnecessary with just the kind of damage that we're seeing to these guys. But for a tag match, for a brawl, the four guys involved, we've seen what they do in the last couple of months. Again, I was really impressed, and I definitely recommend going back to watch it if anybody missed it.
Onwards with the TV review.
Yeah, just the last couple of things for the 20th of December, Bob, as we alluded to in the news. Young rookie Steve Richards seems to be kind of having a bit of a character crisis at the minute, where he's taking after Scotty Flamingo, Scotty the Body, Johnny Polo, as to say WWF fans might recognise him as. He's kind of taking on that guy's, but to be fair with the issues that he's having with that character, what do you think he's super kick, Bob?
Well, let's get to it in the 27th show.
Well, we'll come to that then. I don't want to take away your spotlight. You're quite right, Bob. Just the last bit again.
The great superkick was on the 27th show, so I just want to be.
Well, that's it, I suppose. It was kind of, they had a nice superkick, Stevie, and the 20th, but we'll build up to the 27th. It just stole the show.
It wasn't that good, I'll be honest. We're probably giving it too much, but carry on.
but yeah, last bit was just the Public Enemy again, continuing their tour in New York, their hometown tour, just visited Rockefeller Center, pretty much alluded to Rocco trying to convince Johnny Grunge to steal the Christmas tree.
And on to December 27th, we get a challenge from the Pit Bulls to Brad Breed, saying the losers should split up. Pre-take from the Pit Bulls calls out the Rottens, and then Brad Breed, we accept the Pit Bulls challenge on the hardcore phone line. Chad Austin comes out for an in-ring promo, bigs up WCW this time rather than Smoky Mountain. We get an Extreme Warfare match, which essentially is ECW's version of the Royal Rumble. The way this match aired, I've got a feeling they take this without intending to put it on TV, because Joey Styles did a lot of cut-ins and there was a lot of jump cuts, so we didn't really get the full flow, and it only lasted, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes on TV. Ended with Ron Simmons winning, eliminating Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko at the end. That's presumably building up Simmons for his ECW title match against Douglas in the new year. The Public Enemy announced that there will be a 4-on-3 match at next month's TV taping. They'll be teaming with Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit to face Paulie Dangerously's 9-1-1, Sabu and Taz in a handicap match. They haven't shown it yet. I think we'll get to that at the beginning of January, but Public Enemy were still with the tag team belt, so the implication at least was that they retained against Sabu and Taz at the TV tapings. Stevie Richards paying homage to Scotty the Body Flamingo. He has a match with JT Smith. Crowd was hot. Richards, he fights Smith. Stevie takes a beating. A low blow gets momentum. Then hits a wonderful super kick in the corner. It's fantastic. And it's weird, though. We have one with DDP, I think, at the start of the year, where he hit a punch, I think, to Johnny Bad. And it was such a nice sound. Like, the crowd really gasped. And this was a super kick, and it's one of those things where it made a really nice noise. I thought, oh, okay, he's probably just stepped on the the mat as he did it. And then I watched it back. It's like, well, no, he didn't. It was out of time. And I was like, okay, he probably slapped his leg, as Shawn Michaels sometimes does when he does his super kick. No, he didn't. That sound was, that sound was pure boot into JD Smith's face. It wasn't as good as I built up earlier, but it was very nice. Anyway, we got Dean Malenko defending his, well, the TV title, whether it's his or Jason's, or it depends what you ask Jason, against Surfer Ray Odyssey. Very nice grappling from the shooter in a surprisingly even contest. Malenko wins in the end, with the Cloverleaf submission. Then in the final match, on December 27th and the month, Chris Benoit faces Hack Myers, a rapid start from Benoit. Style building up as a true mercenary, a strong suplex gimmick built match. With Taz and Benoit could be gold. Oh, this is Dell's notes, by the way. The match drops after Benoit injures Myers' neck, obviously in kayfabe, after an overhead suplex. They're building up Benoit as the crippler. Dell, what do you think about this?
It
comes off the back of the thing with Sabu where Benoit dropped him on his neck. Weird in the sense that, one, this isn't the crowd to try and pass worked injuries over against. Mm-hmm. And two, you're calling Benoit the crippler when Sabu's back in action.
Yep. It's kind of, there's basic kind of logic gaps in it, Bob, but I think it is really intriguing to see him as a character. I mean, we've seen briefly what he can do at the, at the end of this match, when he gets the win, we kind of talking on the mic. It doesn't seem as if it is Benoit's strong point. It is really kind of building him up in ring, kind of similar to what we've got with Sabu, ironically enough, where you don't hear him a lot outside of the ring. It's all about the brutality that he's got inside the ropes. I mean, it's definitely intriguing. I mean, he is a really good technical wrestler. His suplexes are as good as the Tasmaniacs, and you could probably say the Tasmaniacs are as good as anything that you've got in the business at the minute. But when you're talking about kind of being a crippler, Sabu has kind of worked through cracked ribs. We've kind of seen him signing that deal with New Japan. It's maybe a bit of a difficult angle to try and win it over, as you say, with that Philadelphia crowd. But he is definitely one to watch. I think this gimmick could be the making of him.
Yeah, it could be something. I mean, I just wouldn't do work neck injuries because the minute Benoit goes to try and pick up Hack Myers, like you ruin the illusion that there might be an actual injury. Yeah. So there's that. Anyway, post-match, Malenko comes out and attacks Myers. Benoit grabs the microphone, calls out Sabu, saying, quote, "It's time to crack a neck." Taz and Sabu come out after Benoit and Malenko. Locker room brawl, all the competitors in the 3-on-4 match, and a lot of other people come out. And a very exciting way to end 1994. Dell, let's discuss the Sabu thing. Signed a deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yeah. There's a couple of interesting points from our perspective. Firstly, is that Sabu allegedly asked ECW for a contract. This ECW aren't in a situation where they can give out contracts.
Yeah.
There's not really discussed about that, really. I mean, I don't know, maybe he was just like angling. But I don't think that's a smart idea for ECW at this stage, if they're even thinking about it, which it sounds like they're not.
Well, that's it. I mean, there is a big, big focus on these live events, Bob, and you know yourself, I mean, all it takes is something else in the same town and you could see the gates go down. They're really not in that kind of stable position at the minute to be off on the contractual situation. You obviously see it from Sabu's point of view. He has had that bit of interest previously with the couple of national companies, whether that's something that he would maybe get at his age at the minute. I think he's around about 30. If you want to correct me on that, but I think it's about 30.
Sounds about right, yeah.
So, I mean, it is definitely, he's got a really unique style that you would maybe question whether the Nationals would kind of show that interest. But, I mean, you've definitely got to take your hat off to him for getting that deal over in Japan. I mean, he's worked with another federation over there. He's got the style. He's a unique character. He's got the ability to do these matches that not a lot of people can do, whether it's in America or in Japan. And I mean, to be honest with you, I'm just thankful that we're still going to see him in ECW because it's definitely something that I think we would miss.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about other promotions in America. Apparently he did get offers from both the WWF and WCW. I think he's better off in ECW given that I think WWF might work with him in a more proactive way, but they might saddle him with a gimmick that might completely ruin him. I think WCW might stay a bit more true to his kind of roots and his relation to the Sheik. But equally, there's far less upward momentum there. So I don't think either would have been a particularly good move. Maybe, you know, you look at someone like the 1-2-3 Kid in the WWF, and maybe you could say that, you know, there's something there that he could go, well, they're doing something with him. Well, they are, but they're not putting him in the top spot. And Sabu's such a unique guy. I don't think you want to, particularly as we see kind of, you know, both major national promotions kind of reining it in when it comes to the violence and the wrestling style. I don't think you want to see Sabu almost with his legs cut off, kind of going in and not being able to do what makes him so great. I'd rather see him on a smaller scale.
Yeah. We've kind of in that blessed position where we've even mentioned that in the last couple of months with Cactus and WCW, Bob, Sabu's in quite a lucky position where it's more the threat. He getting that neutering, he getting that kind of really watered down version of what he is. He can see what it's happened to other people, and he's in a position where it's not necessarily happened to him, but he's got the idea that it could, so he's kind of in a bit of a position of control. I mean, WCW side, you could really see him going in there as a credible challenge for Hogan. I mean, it's definitely better than what we've maybe seen in the three faces of fear in the last week. Well, I mean, he's credible, he's dangerous, he's
Can you imagine Sabu and Hogan? I mean, let's overlook the fact that WCW wouldn't, like, Hogan wouldn't let a guy of Sabu's size get anywhere close to him. That'd be an interesting one. I mean, that's almost kind of like a dream scenario in terms of, I'm struggling to even envisage that match.
How it would work. I mean, well, we spoke about it before. It's kind of seeing the Ric Flair-Hogan angle play it in WCW. We wanted something different, to see something with Hogan that we've not seen before. And with a man that's had the length of a career as he had in the WWF, that's a pretty difficult thing to do, is see something different with Hogan, and seeing Sabu there would be totally different. And as I say, better than what the... seemingly what the options are at the minute. But I mean, even down the card in WCW, we've got the doubts at the minute over Ricky Steamboat with that injury, whether he's going to come back. We've got Austin at the minute.
Steamboat's done.
You could easily see Sabu slitting into that kind of point, whether it's not what we kind of go with the world title straight away. We've got a US TV kind of title situation there with Austin Steamboat out injured. We've got the likes of Honky Tonk Man's been in there, Johnny B. Badd. Sabu could easily go into that and just make a totally different play for what they've got down there.
Well, he could, but he won't. And thankfully, I think he's better off in ECW. I like what they're doing with him. I like, you know, and the other thing is he needs a mouthpiece, and Heyman's as good as he's going to get.
Perfect, yeah.
And that will do that for this month. For this part of the show anyway. Del, thank you very much for your contribution to this show.
You're not at all. Thanks, Bob.
On our end of year review show that we're going to be recording, tomorrow, I think. Del, you're on Twitter.
I am. It's just Del, DEL_Muir, MUIR, modern stuff on there, as well as flashbacks to the project.
Excellent. All right, and we'll be back after this, and we'll be discussing the WWF.
Lottie Donnie, we like to party, but Johnny, this Saturday night, December the 17th, there ain't gonna be no party. And you know why, Johnny?
Why is that, Rocco?
Because the first thing that happened to us in Philadelphia, the people, they dissed us, they turned on us, Johnny, like Dobermans.
And then, Rocco, Mr. Commissioner, he even turned on us, and we gave him the cookie.
A cookie?
Oh, Rocco, I don't know. Now, the psycho yuppie, Paul E. Dangerously. He says he's for extreme. But Rocco, you're looking at extreme right here. In Five Boy Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge. And this Saturday night, Paulie, you bring your Taz and Sabu. Homicidal, suicidal, death defiant, genocidal. Hey Rocco, what's that mean?
I think he means Sabu's fixed.
You mean he's neutered?
Neutered, that's right.
Oh, okay. I got it now. And Taz! Taz! You at the wrong place at the wrong time. Cause you're gonna have to suffer the consequences too. This Saturday night, Holiday Hell, Rocco.
Morley, dangerously, we hear you've been saying some bad things about our mama.
Mama?
And we heard that you've been calling Papas a pimp.
Hmm? Gotta make a living! So, Polly, you bring Taz and Sabu to the ECW arena!
Because the only breaking there's gonna be is not gonna be tables! It's gonna be necks and bones! And Sabu! Taz! It's over! You will not be the two men to calm down the public enemy! We are! The Mac Daddies are the Mac Daddies. And we are the Mac Daddies of violence.
So Sabu, Taz, you bring yourself and Psycho Yuppie. You get them ready. Because they're going to face something like they never faced before. We like to party. We cause a lot of trouble and we hurt everybody. Rock-a-bye, baby.
Fifth of December Raw. Jeff Jarrett faced the British Bulldog in the opener of the 5th of December Raw. Bulldog tosses Jarrett to the outside, then mocks Jarrett's strut and the crowd pop. Former WCW wrestler Brian Armstrong has debuted as Jarrett's lackey and is dressed in a bandana, baseball cap and shades, and is dressing like the ring crew. He's acting as Jarrett's bodyguard. Jarrett runs down the aisleway, but Bulldog picks him up over his head and puts him back in the ring while the ref is counting. As Bulldog goes to get back into the ring, Jarrett's lackey grabs hold of Bulldog's leg and the distraction causes the count out. We have a King's Court. Shawn Michaels, on commentary for the evening, as it is, joins Jerry Lawler. Shawn asks whether we would have heard of Diesel without Shawn Michaels. Says the Heartbreak Kid put the call in Big Daddy. Says he put the Intercontinental and Tag Team titles around his waist and he put the World Wrestling Federation title around his waist. As quickly as I made you, I will disassemble you. We got to Pensacola footage of Bob Holly in action in a race. Holly is a real life race driver and will lead Team WWF next year. During the last match between Well Done, managed by Harvey Whippleman, and the Bushwhackers, Whippleman got in announcer Howard Finkel's face. Finkel ignored him, but then alerted the referee after Whippleman was involved in the finish. Finkel and Whippleman squared off. The 12th of December Raw. Backlund versus Doink. Dink comes out unaccompanied by Doink. Dink stalls and Doink attacks Backlund from behind. IRS has two druids now. He claims The Undertaker is the biggest tax cheat. Jerry Lawler says he and Bearer probably didn't pay the sales tax on the urn. IRS will face Luger on Raw next week. Harvey Whippleman comes out during an Aldo Montoya match. Whippleman gets in Finkel's face and pushes him down. Finkel will be in the corner of the Bushwhackers next week. Santa Claus comes out at the end of the show and gives a giddy Shawn Michaels a toy version of the WWF's Women's Championship. Shawn is not pleased. 19th of December Raw. Lex Luger lost to IRS via countout after Luger went after the Druid at ringside, who turned out to be Tatanka. Backlund out with Jerry Lawler. The crowd chant 8 seconds at him, referencing his loss to Diesel last month. Backlund says that he has proven that he is better than Bret Hart. Bob Backlund then called out Kevin Nash. Yes, Kevin Nash, a Neanderthal and a Tyrannosaurus Rex. He said Tyrannosaurus Rex dominated everyone, then he went extinct. Says that the chicken wing will exterminate him. Pamela Anderson will be hosting the Royal Rumble next month. Rumble is being billed as a new wrestler every 60 seconds, so expect that match to be a short one. Howard Finkel teaming with the Bushwhackers, dressed in a Bushwhacker hat and camo trousers against Well Done. Fink is fully embracing his role as the trio defeat Harvey Whippleman's men. December 26th, British Bulldog vs. Tatanka. Ted DiBiase gets involved on the outside, so Lex Luger runs out and attacks Tatanka. Out comes Bam Bam Bigelow as the quartet brawl. Henry Godwin debuted as a hog farmer this month, and Hakushi will be coming to Monday Night Raw very soon. Diesel came out to a big pyro display on King's Court. Shawn Michaels was not happy at ringside on commentary. King berated Diesel for a number of minutes, and Diesel simply told him to shut up, grabbed his crown and threw him to the outside before wearing King's crown and sitting on the throne. In the main event, Undertaker wins a squash match, and afterwards IRS and the Druids come out to ringside as Raw concludes for 1994.
Did you ever hear of Big Daddy Cool before the Heartbreak Kid? Never! Never! So if I were to come out here and say that I plucked him from obscurity and made him a household name, would that be fairly correct?
That would be absolutely positively correct.
Now, Big Daddy Cool, let's get one thing perfectly straight. Do you know who I am?
Yeah.
I'm the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, Jack. And nobody disses the HB Kid, including a 7-foot Diesel. Because I want you to remember one thing, champ. The Heartbreak Kid put the cool in Big Daddy. I put the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship belt around your waist. I put the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team title belt around your waist. And as much as you and everybody else in the World Wrestling Federation would hate to admit it, but Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, put the World Wrestling Federation title around your waist.
Yeah, nothing really major to discuss from the WWF this month, and I think you would probably have heard that from the TV review. But we will look forward to the Royal Rumble. Chris, speaking of the Royal Rumble match itself, firstly we've got the thing where it looks like it's going to be potentially a kind of 40-minute Royal Rumble. They're teasing one entrance every minute rather than every 2 minutes. The match time will probably presumably be a lot shorter. Chris, what are your thoughts ahead of this Royal Rumble match? Are you excited? Have we got a big list of potential winners?
Definitely not. There's only really one winner looking at it. Shawn Michaels is the only one you can see as being the one to leave as the victor. It's strange because I do want Shawn Michaels to win it, but it's like such an exciting match. When it's that predictable, it does take a lot away from it. And it probably has a large part why it is going to be a shorter match. It might actually be a good bit of planning. It's going to be a shorter match because if you have an hour-long match, but the outcome's what you knew it was going to be anyway, like before any action taking place, you might feel slightly more disappointed than that might have played into it. But
it's a wonderful angle to approach from. What are they going to be least disappointed by? although to be honest, I think that logic path is fairly sound, Kieran.
Yeah, it's the same, really. There's such a dearth in that roster at the minute. And they're putting him on such sort of like a pedestal and pushing him that far. He's just the only guy. It's actually interesting. I actually thought of that, of having that guy there and then have that in relation to the shorter Royal Rumble match. I hadn't actually put that together till Chris just said that, but that's actually a really good point.
Yeah, I've got 8 names written down, which is being incredibly generous. But barring Sid Vicious coming back, or Ric Flair, or something ridiculous. But the 8 names I've got, which we can pretty much rule out 6 straight away: Shawn Michaels, Owen Hart, Bob Backlund, King Kong Bundy, Bret Hart, Lex Luger, The Undertaker, and the British Bulldog. I mean, Luger's not going to win it. Hart's not going to be in it. Undertaker and Bundy are facing each other at WrestleMania. Bulldog's a babyface. Backlund is a match they've done. Owen is probably the second favourite. And then it's Shawn. I mean, I say it is quite a shame because you know, we could have a rumble where, you know, 30 people could win it, but it's like, I wouldn't mind having that list of eight if I could make a good case for all of them, and I just can't. Owen would be a... Owen and Diesel is not a WrestleMania headline-worthy match. Certainly not yet, even though they both have very, very good 1994s. And yeah, we really are just left with Michaels. But Kieran, I think that all being said, the Michaels thing is so obvious because it makes so much sense. It's not just that there are no other obvious winners, although that does kind of play into it. It is so obvious because this is just the program. Michaels and Diesel have been together for 18 months. You know, the pairing makes sense. They're basically building the storyline. I mean, if you watch Raw this month, they're basically building to Michaels and Diesel already.
And it's sort of like that. The Rumble has always been that event, or I feel like it should be. It's that one where you're setting up your big WrestleMania main event, but you're also, you know, trying to preview or show off that young guy who you're wanting to build and carry the company on. And I think the Raw Rumble is that perfect event because it shows sort of like the stamina, the longevity. They get to mix it up, work with different people, and you can really showcase someone. So I agree with you in kind of that way. It's kind of like the perfect match for that guy, and that guy is Shawn Michaels for that company.
Yeah, certainly agree with that. Chris, we've got Diesel and Bret Hart in the main event. The thoughts that it was going to be kind of Bret sort of bit turning heel, though not really, although that's certainly nothing that's played out yet on television, and Brett's done promos since that were straight up and down babyface. These two had a very good match at King of the Ring last year. Chris, can they repeat it?
I'd think so. With the Rumble itself going short, they're going to have plenty of time, so there's no reason why not. I think it should be a very good match. Kieran?
Yeah, I mean, I like watching Bret Hart work. I don't think he's amazing at everything he does, but wrestling wise, I've kind of never seen him wrestle many big guys before. I think that him and Diesel can have a pretty good match.
Kieran, how does this match finish?
Which match?
The Diesel Bret Hart match. How do you think? What are we looking at here? I mean, we're talking about Diesel out of the gate as the next Hulk Hogan. Can he pin Bret Hart clean? I mean, is that possible? If this was the next Hogan, if this was Hogan number two, Hogan would win this match outright. And yet I don't feel like that's going to happen with Diesel.
No, I kind of feel that. It's interesting what you said about the Bret Hart maybe being that tweener kind of character. I would actually prefer further, if Nash is going to win clean, that you kind of push that idea that Bret is sort of working heel and face within the same match. Maybe something happens during the match which, you know, gets a bit of heat on Bret, and then Nash goes over clean. But I would hope that he would go over clean if he's then going to go on to be that next, you know, the guy, the face of the company, if you like. Whereas Michaels is the up-and-coming guy. If Nash is getting ready to be the guy at the top, then you would hope that he would go over clean.
Chris?
Well, if you're building to Michaels Diesel at WrestleMania, then just logically, Diesel should be winning his title defence before WrestleMania cleanly. I think that's just... It's the way to do it properly, is to have him win clean at the Rumble. Whether it will happen, I'm not sure. I think it should. Definitely should.
Yeah, I almost think it should too. And even like, forget shenanigans, forget a way, like, cause there's a way of doing it. Kieran, you kind of touched on something happens during the match. You could almost have like, Bret gets impatient with the referee and then like that knocks him off his game, and Diesel picks up on Bret maybe not being all there and pins him clean. There's a way of doing that, but I'd almost have Diesel run over him, pardon the pun. Just because if you're going to go with him, just go with it. Like, you've done Bret, we've done Bret all this year, and clearly you didn't think it was up to the level you wanted it to be at, even though I think Bret's had a very good year. And it's kind of like, I kind of feel that as much as you might do a bit of damage to Bret being pinned by Diesel, I think you do more damage to Diesel if he doesn't win clean. than you would, because I think Brett is in a better position to recover it. And I think there's a way of telling it where Diesel can win clean, but at least gives Brett something where it's like, oh, you know what, my head wasn't in it, or I got distracted, or something happened. And, you know, you've got to set up Brett for some full WrestleMania match. God knows who it's going to be with. Maybe you could play that into it a little bit. And again, you don't want to do it in a way that takes away from Diesel's victory, but there's ways around it. I mean, God knows who Brett's going to face at WrestleMania. That could be quite interesting. But yeah, I think that the Rumble may be a bit predictable. Diesel's going to win his title match come what may. Shawn Michaels is going to win the Rumble come what may. I can tell you that now. And so really it's kind of, let's watch it play out. And it's not going to be the most mysterious show, but then again, most WWE pay-per-views aren't really. They're not ones for dropping major shocks on us, perhaps with the odd exception with Backlund winning the title last month. But it's an intriguing show. I think we'll have the culmination of the WWF Tag Team Title Tournament on that show as well, along with a couple of other matches. I think, the Rumble match. You know, I listed eight names. I'm being incredibly generous there. Luger's not going to win it. I think I'll stop the show if he does. other than that, there's not much to it. We will move on to talk about Randy Savage. We kind of discussed it a bit during the show, but Savage during the Starrcade bit actually was kind of, for all the build of him being there, him being on the car, being on the actual show, he was down there fairly minimal. He ran out to run off the three-face Sophia at the end, teased the thing with turning heel, then didn't. And then he was kind of backstage with Hogan, but sort of kind of in the background without really doing anything. Again, it's one of those things where if they've got a really smart video team, once Savage has turned heel, they can almost have kind of Savage watching in the background, maybe. But Kieran, we've seen and heard the Savage promo at the start of the month, and we've seen Savage's involvement on the pay-per-view, which is literally it at the moment. He hasn't been involved since, or in the meantime, rather. Kieran, what did you think of the Savage introduction? Did they do a good job with it?
Yeah, actually, to be fair, Bob, I actually really enjoyed the promo. You kind of know what you're getting with a Savage promo, but he's so good at getting the points he wants sort of over that you kind of always get invested in him. Or I personally always have, I won't speak for other people until, you know, they've got to say, but personally speaking, I always get invested in Macho Man. But like I said, the way that I like the promo, and then it's sort of kind of, I think that's where I got that sense of maybe something, there was going to be more friction when it actually came to the pay-per-view. Maybe from that promo, it sort of teased that there was going to be more. I just preferred that promo actually translated into pay-per-view instead of going, when he actually debuts at the pay-per-view, he sort of comes in and shakes his, you know, sort of holds the belt and then shakes his hand. I like the promo, but I didn't like the payoff to the promo, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there was a phenomenal moment in this promo where me and Gene Oakland goes, you know, Hulk Hogan's the WCW World Champion, and Savage goes, really? It's like, come on. I thought it was fantastic.
Classic.
You think on the way in, at least you'd work that bit out. I don't know. And Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, it was good, but I would have maybe liked to have gone a different route. Like, the whole of Starrcade, really, you knew he was going to come out at the end, whether he was going to turn heel or shake Hogan's hand or whatnot. So, that was so predictable that maybe it would have been an idea to just have him debut at the pay-per-view sort of unannounced. Maybe you could have had Kevin Sullivan say what he said in his promo, that the man has been paid. Just something subtle like that, and then he comes out. I think that would have been probably a better way to have him debut.
I completely agree, but unfortunately, we live in a world where people who pay Hulk Hogan a lot of money are very interested in pay-per-views getting a lot of buys.
Yeah.
And having Savage rock up unannounced, while it would have been a great moment, certainly would have knocked a certain percentage off the pay-per-view buy rate. But I don't think that was a bad idea. I mean, basically, it looks like Savage will turn heel at some point, you know. But I like the fact that he didn't come in and it wasn't just a case of, here I am, I'm babyface Randy Savage. It was, even though it was still a babyface promo, but it was still, I'm better than Hulk Hogan. And I quite like that. And again, it might be one of those things where they'll recap on it in a year's time and make it look really good once he's turned heel. But it was fine. It built up anticipation, what Savage going to do. They tied into that well at the end. And I like the fact that for the moment, at least, Savage is going to be a face, because the Hogan Vader thing we need to get through. And that should take at least a couple of months, you would have thought, perhaps longer. And so as a result, it's like, well, we don't need Savage to heal while we've got Vader. Get through that. And as we say, as I said earlier, there's the potential for Savage kind of pivoting through Vader, winning the title, then turning heel, and then Hogan chases him and Savage as the heel. I think that'd be pretty good, actually. And that, because that could fill up most of 95, and then we've got the returning Ric Flair in that mix as well. Potentially as a babyface, I suppose, and then maybe we can pivot into Flair and Savage. There's plenty of options, long story short, with this, and I think a very good first month for this pairing. Well, also he's going to feature on TV more, and he's probably going to wrestle next month, I would have thought, as well, at the January Clash. So we'll see how they play out there, but I think a big box ticked first up. And the other thing I want to talk about, which is a tad more insignificant, but I think noteworthy still. Two specific segments on WCW Saturday Night this month. We mentioned them in the WCW TV review at the start. It wasn't really any audio we could play because they were more segments rather than clips. But not the debut of the Blacktop Bully, but kind of the progression of the Blacktop Bully character. He's been at ringside for months in this kind of red sleeveless jacket and this kind of truck driver red hat. And basically, they keep cutting to him, and he shouts abuse at one of the wrestlers, and they just move on. They're playing it up as it's just some guy in the crowd. Then the week, well, kind of the last week in November on Saturday night, he gets into it with Dustin Rhodes. Dustin slaps him, and then the police department, who are on centre stage, escort Blacktop Bully away. They take him to jail. So we then cut to the second WCW Saturday Night episode of the month. And kind of Rob Parker's in the jail. We get CCTV footage of him. He goes to bail out Blacktop Bully. And I won't go through it in full. We covered it in the TV review. But they say, no, you'll need $75,000. So he goes back the next week. This time the camera's in the cell itself, or in the jail rather. And kind of Rob Parker's got the money. Now, where he's got the money from, honestly, we don't know. But he comes out, and ultimately we have Blacktop Bully as a guy who's been bailed out of jail by Conor Rock Parker, and it looks like they're pivoting him into a feud with Dustin Rhodes. Kieran, as a WCW Saturday Night's fairly stale in terms of its squash match, promo with me, Gene Oakland, squash match, main event that ends in a DQ. That's basically WCW Saturday Night in a nutshell. This was, I thought, really good. In a show where not a lot happens, this I thought was really intriguing.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like a break from the norm, if you know what I mean. Because I actually like the way the first one, when Colonel Parker visits the prison, you actually don't get to see him, if you like. So you immediately you're interested because of the way it's filmed as well. It's on the CCTV, so immediately you're thinking, as the audience, you're thinking, oh, I'm seeing something that probably I'm not supposed to see, kind of thing. And then it's sort of like that first one teases you. And then you see, then in the second one, you see the character himself. But I actually just like the way it was just a break from, like you said, from that good word, that stale formula. It seemed like they were trying something different. So already I'm already interested at least in checking where this character's going to go and what's going to happen with Dustin Rhodes or whatever happens in the future. So overall, I think it did a good job of building that guy up.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree entirely. It was, after the months of him being at ringside, it is actually quite, like, nice to see them they've done something with it that has me interested, rather than just some guy in the crowd. Like, the way they've gone with it, he's now been bailed out of jail, he's gonna, well, come back presumably soon, and, it's really quite intriguing. I was really quite impressed with it as well.
Yeah, to fill in a bit that obviously you would have heard how I have been reading the TV review, but he did appear on the following week on WCW Saturday Night and cut a promo and basically said, I've been wanting a deal with WCW for 2 years and they're not giving it to me, so, you know, I've got in this way now. And as I say, it's one of those things, a lot of wrestlers come, look at Alex Wright, look at a guy who comes in, he's German, that's about it. Does some terrible dancing and now we're supposed to care about him. A lot of guys don't get a lot of fanfare when they come in. They've given us a backstory and they've given us a reason to believe why he's such an arsehole. And I think it's a really good start. You know, now they've got to work out a way of transferring that into a viable program with Dustin Rhodes. But Dustin Rhodes is a pro, we know that. And it's got potential. It's got legs. And I really think this could go somewhere if they do it right. But to a point, more of these kind of segments. They tried with the mini movies last year. They spent tens of thousands of dollars on overproduced, like, movie segments that weren't any good. This is the kind of stuff they should have been aiming at. This kind of thing where it's like a little bit offbeat and right. You can't do it too often. You can't always do it in this style. A little bit offbeat and give us something to flesh out some of these characters because they've got some good workers and it's like build around that and you'll be fine. And that'll do that for this week, this month's show. We will be back in the second half, or recording tomorrow night. We're recording our end of year review show as well. So that's why we're not coming area of that now. But I'd like to thank firstly Chris White. Chris?
Thanks for having me.
And Kieran Mitchell?
Yeah, thanks again, Bob. Cheers.
Kieran, what was your favourite, well, I was going to say favourite moment of the month, but we're doing pretty drab pay-per-view, so what do you think?
What, of the favourite moment of the month?
Yeah, kind of pay-per-view, really, but that was already really sure.
Yeah, I'd probably say Vader. Overall, it was just Vader's in-ring work, and then that promo at the end, maybe a bit of what's coming with Hogan and Savage. But mainly, it's Vader is my standout, really.
Chris?
I was going to go Vader as well, so I'll mix it up a bit and go for the cameraman falling over in the Mr. T match at Starcade.
All right, yeah, no, very, very, very good point. I'll be safe and stick with Vader. I think he's phenomenal. And if, yeah, there are talks of him winning the world title of Hogan, and I wouldn't be against him doing that.
I'd like to see it.
Please.
I certainly would. Anyway, Chris, you're on Twitter?
Yeah, ChrisWhite14.
Kieran?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at JotunThrash666.
Do you want to spell that out for us?
Yes, it's JotunThrash666.
What the hell is that?
Jotun is, it's Norse mythology. It was actually a band I was in. We were called Jotun that right. played thrash metal. And then, of course, I'm the son of Satan. So I'll put 666 at the end.
Right. Okay. All right. I may regret asking that, but whatever. Anyway, that led to the December 94 show. I'm recording with Chris Lacey, Dell and Colin, hopefully tomorrow, the end of year review show. We're going to have a lot of discussion on Hogan's first 6 months in WCW, Bret Hart's run in WWF, the rise of ECW, and our end of year awards. Get excited for that. That'll do that. That's the end of this month's show. You can find us on Twitter at Wrestling20YRS, facebook.com/Wrestling20YRS. We're on iTunes, Wrestling20YRS.com for blogs and all the back episodes. I'm on Twitter at Bobby Bamber. And that's about it, I think. So until next time, which will probably be the end of your review show for most people, goodbye.